Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. This week on Edgewise, we have Bill Jensen. Bill is the CEO of the Jensen Group, a change consulting firm he founded in 1985, and he's an acclaimed speaker. He's the author of the book Simplicity. It's a classic business book on eliminating the clutter in your personal and professional life, and co-author, along with Josh Klein, of a new book entitled Hacking Work, Breaking Stupid Rules for Smart Results. Bill shared with me before we got the microphones turned on that his personal life fantasy is to bicycle around the world via breweries. That's a great life ambition, and you're my hero.
Thank you, Dave.
Welcome to Edgewise, Bill.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
Now, Bill, Hacking Work. The first thing that occurred to me when I read it was, who is this guy and why is he looking into my subconscious? So many people out there in the workplace right now who are getting good and meaningful work done have figured out ways around the bureaucracy. It's not about protest. It's not about not doing good work. It's not about not delivering on your goals. Matter of fact, it's about kicking ass in the workplace in spite of those structures that are in place. So I have a question. Why is there a need for this book right now?
Over two decades now, I've been researching on how to make work simpler and get it done more easily. And for over a decade, I've been consulting with senior execs and keep trying to point out to them the number one source of work complexity is the infrastructure that we use inside our companies, the tools, the procedures, the processes, everything that is designed to help us get our work done, to be an enabler, is actually a problem. But senior executives own that and they're not willing to address it. And I've been getting more and more frustrated. How do I get these guys to pay attention to the fact that they're destroying our efficiency instead of making it? Mm-hmm. The difference being personal efficiency versus corporate efficiency. They do great things to make the company more effective, but not necessarily the individuals. So I was getting very frustrated with this. And at a conference, I met Josh Klein, the co-author, who is a hacker. And between us, we came up with, why are we trying to work within the system? Why not teach everybody at work how to hack around this problem? That was the source and the inspiration of the book. You can take control of the infrastructure and the tools and the procedures to not just get corporate work done, but also to get your work done more efficiently and effectively.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But there is a need for standards and best practices. There is a need for control.
Yes.
So what is your response to concerned senior executives who come to you and say, what you're talking about is anarchy?
Yes, Mr. Executive, I see your perspective. I understand this may look like anarchy. Let me try to explain to you what's going on behind the scenes. First, I'm not proposing anything. All Josh and I are doing is exposing what is already happening that everybody is turning a blind eye to. All we did was bring it out of the closet. We didn't promote anything. All this hacking is already happening.
That's interesting.
Josh and I absolutely agree that those processes are needed, but there's a core missing element. Mm-hmm. If every manager was just a widget to be plugged in to be a cog in the machine, then there would be no need to hack the work because every process is corporate centered. But we are in a knowledge and service work economy where people have to make decisions and they need information the way they need it, not necessarily the way the man says they need it. They need to interpret things in order to do the right things. And there is a total lack of user-centeredness. So the core message is we're not anarchists trying to destroy the processes and procedures. We're just a wake-up call to the executives. Hey, if you want smarter work, design the processes and procedures and tools so that the people who are using them get what they need out of them.
This isn't just about technology, is it?
No, but let me start there. This is the driving force that's going to scare the executives and they have to deal with it. You and I now have as much computing power in the palm of our hand when we walk out of the building as there is in most corporate structures. It's not technology-based, but the executives are realizing that people are walking around. I have an app for that in my personal life, but I don't have an app for that in my business life. What's going on here?
Uh-huh. Sure.
There are two driving forces that will help executives change. One is technology, what's in the palm of my hand. The other is Gen Y or the millennials. This is a generation that is now becoming the main demographic within the workplace.
Primary population within that workforce.
Yes. Over the next 5 years, depending on your industry, you will be hitting a tipping point where they are the most critical generation in your workforce. And that's a concern because these kids have grown up with this technology and know how to use it to work around anything. So when you combine everybody waking up, I have power in my hand with an entire generation, there's a whole new challenge for executives.
In the book, you quite clearly delineate benevolent or good hackers and bad hackers. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because the word itself, hacker, is a very loaded word.
It is. And we want to be very, very, very clear. It's about benevolence. It's Luke, use the force, the source of good. It's helping business stop itself from shooting itself in the foot by using these small workarounds. And we put in the book a value system, a code of ethics about how to hack benevolently. Never destroy the company's ability to do anything good. Never destroy the systems. But the workarounds are, if you need information to do your job, you should be able to get it the way you need it, not necessarily the way IT says you need it. So the most common hack we found through all our research, talking to over 4,000 hackers, was jumping over the firewall.
Hmm.
Not to do anything bad with it, not to take corporate secrets out and share them, not to do anything bad with customer data, nothing like that.
All right. Can you give us an example?
Absolutely. The most common hack was, I can't get everything done at my desk or on my corporate sanctioned laptop. So I email a file to myself at home and I work on it at home and I bring it back. People are working hard, but corporate IT rules are actually preventing it. So this is absolutely benevolent. The end goal, if your hack is successful, corporate results get faster, team morale and efficiency get better, and you get more work-life balance and more things done in your workday because you're doing workarounds.
Okay. Let's say you've successfully hacked a solution. You come up with something that works for you and works for your users. Do you advocate making that a corporate best practice, or is there some romanticism associated with having it still be a hack?
Yes to both. First, let's admit that we can only control what's within our sphere of influence.
Right.
The people doing these hacks are hacking because they don't have the ability to influence the infrastructure. So the first thing we say in the idea of benevolence is pay it forward. Strip out all proprietary information, no names, no company names, no company data, but put the hack out there so people can use it in their situation. Second thing is, dear boss, here's how to embrace these hacks. And we're not asking the worker who is doing the hack to push it up, but asking the leaders to take responsibility that these workarounds are necessary.
Let's talk a little bit about a term that means a lot to me, but I'm interested in your definition of it and how it fits into this whole process, and that's user advocacy. Can you talk about that?
Over the last two decades, most organizations have gotten the concept that they need to be focused on the customer. That's good for all of us. That's where the money comes from. Those customers are users of our for sale products and services. Now, internally, we have users of our procedures, our policies, our tools, our processes. And from the research we have done, there is next to zero effort being put on making the tools and support and structures user-centered. So Google, for example, recently had a redesign of its website. They spent hundreds of thousands of hours focusing on this, and they tested it with all of their employees before they ever unleashed it to the public. And what they were testing was, do I move this one pixel here or there? Because they knew little tiny incremental changes made a big difference in the user experience, in this case, of the customer of Google.
Right.
But next to none of that is being done inside companies. If corporate executives are serious about efficiency and productivity, they need to incorporate beyond corporate efficiencies, individual efficiencies, which means studying how to make a process or procedure more efficient and effective for each individual.
Could you describe a little bit the observations you've made about the passion these hackers feel, the emotional engagement when they get consumed with solving a problem?
Let's be clear, we're talking about benevolent hacking. These are not bad people. They see themselves as like a kid wearing a Superman cape. They look at any challenge and say, this can be figured out. We can work on this. We can reinvent this. So hackers see the tool that they're given, a laptop, a telephone, a process and procedure, and say, this came to me broken. I can make it better. And all they're about is making it better from the user's perspective. They will go to great lengths. The people we talk to worked hours and hours and hours to make an improvement in a form, even if it wasn't approved, so that their team could do 2 hours less a week. So it's all about things come to me imperfect, and I can help fix it.
Mm-hmm.
The source of this is from childhoods. We were born to hack. This is how we learn.
Absolutely.
Each of us, everyone that's listening, the way we learn is we take things apart. When we were growing up, we sit there and we take something apart. But then we got corrupted by the school system. We were told, hacking's bad, taking things apart's not good. This is how you learn. There's always an authority figure. There's always an approved process. And you have to sit in rows and earn gold stars. So children know how to hack, and we educate it out of them.
You know, that's a very interesting observation, because when we got our kids the toy Legos, they came in a box with a little picture of the jet or whatever heck it was on the front and the instructions inside on how to build it. And they would build the jet once. They would never build that jet again. They would build something else.
Yes.
And then these Lego blocks would become part of this gigantic chest filled with Legos. And they got stirred up, and God only knows what they became part of. But you're right. I think it's educated out of children.
And that differentiates the hackers from the non-hackers. The non-hackers work the way they were educated. The hackers color outside of the lines, and they say, this is a system. I can make it better. And they make it better.
Now, just to wrap this up, maybe a short list of takeaways to keep in mind when considering this idea of hacking work or circumventing the rules in order to deliver a great solution.
Before I get to the key takeaways, just so everybody knows, in the book, we detail two different kinds of hackings. We talk about how to build a hacking toolkit. We talk about five different hacks everyone should do in their career. We tell tons and tons of stories about secretaries who did this, about technologists who did that, about guys in banks who hacked a workaround and kept their senior team very happy.
Could you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. Quick example, Elizabeth needed her customer service program approved, but senior management wouldn't because the payout wouldn't be in 4 quarters. So she went to YouTube and she interviewed customers, their negative reviews. She put customer negative reviews of her company on YouTube. There was such a public outcry from the YouTube sightings that senior management quickly approved her project. So these are the kind of workarounds that are happening.
That was pretty courageous.
And there's more. Probably the one that will strike fear in most executives that send their troops to AMA programs deals with performance management. Matt was a young new hire who said, I'm in my early 20s, and the average stay for me by the time I'm 30 will be about a year, year and a half at any company. And yet performance assessments are designed as if I'm going to stay here for 5 to 10 years. Give me a break. He Googled a performance assessment, created his own mashup, created his own performance assessment. He went through LinkedIn and he found a guru to critique his performance assessment. Then he went to HR and he said, here, this is how you will evaluate me.
That's wonderful.
And he got it done. So even performance assessment, the control is being taken away and it's being co-authored. That's the thing. It's not anarchy. It's co-authoring for benevolence.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any concluding thoughts you want to leave our audience with?
Yes. You were given an amazing gift when you were born, the ability to be the best you could be. You walk into corporate situations that are not designed to help you be the best you can be. If you are handed tools or systems or processes or procedures that are holding you back from doing great work, you don't have to do it the company's way anymore. You can hack a workaround that helps you do great work. That's the key takeaway for every individual. The key takeaway for executives, this is not anarchy. This is people wanting to do great work for you, and you are the barrier. We're just exposing to you the workarounds that happen inside your company because people know they can do better work than you are helping them to do. So for individuals, you can take more control if that's your choice. For executives, here's a way to get serious about empowerment.
We've been speaking to Bill Jensen, co-author with Josh Klein of a new book, Hacking Work, Breaking Stupid Rules for Smart Results. Bill, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Join the American Management Association group on LinkedIn to share insights with hundreds of your management peers and to discuss practices in the areas of organizational management and leadership. To find us, simply search for the group American Management Association from your LinkedIn account. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.